Good morning, welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Perek Hey, the fifth chapter of Divrei Hayamim Aleph. We're now still in the lists, we're in the family lists, and we've finished now talking about the families of Yehuda and Shimon. Now we move into our Perek of 41 Psukim and deal with two parts. The first is the tribes of the east side of the Jordan, that's going to occupy the first 26 Psukim of the Perek, and then the last Psukim all the way to Perek Pasuk Mem Aleph are going to deal with the line of Kohanim, of priests, as we move to Shevet Levi. It's worthwhile noticing that the Dat Mikra points out that there is the Maase Avos, the precedent of the idea of the occupation of the living in the Trans-Jordan, the east bank of the river, is really from the times of Yaakov Avinu, when on the way back from the house of Lavan, he arrives at a place which he calls Sukkos, because he makes hats for his animals. Sukkos is an area in the area of Gilad, which is on the east side of the Jordan River, and that's ultimately where his children are going to make their hats for, they're going to make their place for their livestock, because it's a very fertile area. So that's sort of putting it all into perspective. The tribes that we're going to look at in this first half of the Perek are Reuven, Gad, and Menashe, and all of them are each the Bechorim, the firstborns to their mothers, Reuven to Leah, Gad to Zilpah, and Menashe to Yosef. Let's take a look at them. The first 10 psukim referred to Reuven and his inheritance. We hear about Reuven and his children in a similar way as we saw with Shimon. We're going to hear about the immediate children of Reuven, and then we're going to hear about the chieftains or the Nesi'im that ruled throughout the generations. So it's going to be a very abridged list of his leadership. It is interesting that the Perek does introduce that he should have been the Bechorim himself, but that was taken away from him and given to Yosef and Yehuda. So the Psukim seem to be focusing on the fact that the reason why Reuven is not the Bechor, is not the firstborn, is because of his actions as regards to Bilhah and his father's relationship with his stepmother, essentially Bilhah. And because of that, he loses his double portion of the firstborn right to Yosef, who gets two portions of Menashe and Ephraim, and he leaves the kingship to Yehuda. Now, as we're describing the different Nesi'im, the different leaders, we hear about all the way down to Be'era, who's the last of the Nesi'im at the times of the goddess of Tiglas, Pilnesar, different ways of being described in Tanakh. And so we hear about these leaders all the way through. And we hear about the different cities that they settle in. Towards the end of the section in Pasuk Yud, we hear about the times of Shaul. There is a war which ensues between Reuven and the Hagriim, which is these inhabitants of Transjordan, as he expands his territory in the area of Gilad. So just an important point over here is to understand this war with the Hagrim. Why is it that they made this war? So the Malbim explains, at the times of Shaul HaMelech, Reuven had grown so much so that there was no space left in their original territory, and they expand outwards to the area of the Hagriim. Hagriim, actually, the Matsuras points out, are Arabs, because they come from the tribes of Hagar. That's why they're called as such. So these are Arab nomads in the land who are conquered by the tribes of Reuven as they expand their territory in the area we call Jordan today. From Psukim Yud Aleph to Yud Zayin, we hear now not about Reuven, but about Bnei Gad. And they have a territory which is also on the east bank of the Jordan, but northeast. So they're above the Reuven territory. And we hear about how they expand upwards into the Eretz HaBashan. The Bashan is the area where we call Golan Heights today. And we hear about their children and their Nesi'im and the cities that they occupy in this area. And it describes how Kulam His Yashvu, all of these places where His Yashvu were Bemei Yosam, Melech Yehuda, Bemei Yeravam, Melech Yisrael. So these were all actually settled in during the times of Yotam and Yerovam, the king of Israel. What's interesting is the Malbim points out that these two kings, if you go in the annals of history, Yotam and Yerovam actually live at different periods. So what do you make of this? So some of the Farshim tried to explain how Yotam took the role of his father Uzziah when he was sick, and therefore it is referring to the same time. But it's very hard to understand how this works. Rather, the Malbim suggests that there were two times when the kingdom of Israel were very powerful, and they in fact had the province of Judea as a subsidiary to it, and it's during these times that the 10 tribes which were in charge actually expanded their territory outwards, and so therefore these are two distinct moments in time under both Yerovam ben Yoash and Yotam, where they were able to expand their territory into the east bank of the Jordan. It's worthwhile noting that Diet Mikra points out that the leaders of the tribe of Reuven are called Nesi'im, whereas the leaders of Gad are called Roshim or Mishnim, which points out to the fact that Reuven never really produced a king. He was cursed by Yaakov and lost the kingship, and so therefore even his leaders are really seen as Nesi'im, which are sub-leaders rather than independent leaders. We then hear about Psukim Yudches to Chof Beis. Now both these tribes in their respective territories, we hear about their Trans-Jordan Wars. So we hear how they gather together with Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven, and Chatzi Shev Menashe. We hear about how they pull together an army of 44,000 class soldiers, and they make war with the Hagriim and Yatura, Nafish, and Nodav, which are these city-state areas on the Transjordan East Bank. And Hashem helps them. It describes how Hashem, because they sublimated themselves and humbled themselves to Hashem, Hashem helped them in these wars, and they're able to capture a huge amount of territory. And it describes the numbers, the incredible numbers of livestock that they were able to capture and the amount of people they took slaves. It says 100,000 soldiers were taken slaves. Why? Because of this, Hashem was with them in this war, and that they were able to maintain this territory until their Golan, until their exile. How could it be that 44,000 could capture 100,000 and slay many more? So the Mitzvot points out that this was all miraculous, and that's what the Psukim are describing, is this was clearly Hashem was on their side when they were expanding their territory. How long did this last for? So the Psukim describe that they stayed in these territories ad Hagola, which means until exile, and the Targum explains ad Dizman Hagalusa da Sancher of Malka da Atur, which means until the times of the exile of the ultimate kingdom or emperor Sancheriv. And we now hear in Psukim Chav Gimel and Chav Dalet about the territories of Chatzi Shev Menashe, how they were able to capture in the area of Bashan and Baal Hermon. So this is really pushing northwards into the Golan Heights and beyond. And the whole area was settled by the Shevet of Chatzi Menashe. Remember that the half tribe of Menashe was placed by Moshe as part of the deal. It is really only Gad and Reuven who are asking for Transjordan. Moshe Rabbeinu assigns Chatzi Shev Menashe. I once heard Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun suggest that they were to act as a bridge tribe, a tribe which would anchor the Transjordan satellite to the Israel proper. And so perhaps that is why Menashe was chosen. Menashe was one of the tribes which was Mechabev, which deeply loved the land of Israel and would act as a very strong and steadfast foundation connector. But it's interesting that it seems as Chatzi Shev Menashe expands, it seems that they're expanding upwards as well to the north, as they need more space for their tribes to be able to do this. In fact, it seems from the Psukim that they increased more than the other two tribes around them, which is fascinating. Hema Ravu, they increased greatly in Pasuk Chof Gimel. And finally, now we reach the apex of this section, which is the sad part of the section, Psukim Chofei to Chofov, where we're told about the exile of the Transjordan tribes, that they were the ones who Vayima'alu, they rebelled against Hashem, they rejected Hashem, and therefore Hashem sent enemies against them, and they were exiled by Pul and Tiglath-Pilneser, or Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, and they were unfortunately exiled. And it describes where they were exiled to. They were born to Lachlach, Tavor, Hara, Nahar, Gozen, until the times that Ezra is writing. When did this happen? So it's interesting, there were a few different stages of exile, as Rashi and the Malbim point out. First, there was Pul, which is one of the earlier emperors of the Syrian Empire, and at the times of Menachem ben Gadi, who was the king of Israel in the north. Then there was Tiglath-Pileser under Pekach ben Remaliah, who was the king there, and finally Sancheriv at the times of Tzidkiyahu HaMelech. And there are various different stages. The Medrash in Eicha Rabbasi presents a machlekes between Rebbe and Rebbe Nosson. Rebbe says that the tribe of Reuven was the first tribe to be exiled, and Rebbe Nosson says it was actually Zvulun and Naphtali, which is on the northwest coast of Israel. It seems from the Psukim here that it was Reuven, but the Malbim suggests that in fact it could have been a little of both. That the Assyrians sent two tours of attack, one along the west coast of Israel and one along the east coast of Israel, going southwards. And in each of these stages, there was an initial conquest and a subsequent conquest. And it was in the subsequent conquest where they ultimately fell. The Gemara in Erchin and Datam and Beis tells us that at the time of the goddess of Bnei God Reuven and Chatzi Shev Benashe, at this time of the fall of this satellite kingdom, was when the Yovel cycle stopped ticking, because this is the first time that the tribes were no longer fully on the land of Israel, which is a terribly tragic moment as well. It's worth noting, as the Dat Mikra points out, that they were the first of the tribes to settle in the land of Israel, and they were the first also to leave the land of Israel, to be exiled first as well. It is also worthwhile noting that in this area, they expanded their territory at their high point to much beyond the area accredited to them at the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, as was very specifically delineated in the Parashios and the Torah, both in Sefer Bamidbar and Sefer Devarim. They expanded much beyond that. Their apex, and unfortunately, were taken into exile. We're now left with the last few Psukim of the Perek, which is its own section, Psukim Chav Zayin to Mem Aleph, in which we hear about the children of Levi. So we have Gershon, Kas, and Merari, and we hear about now the children of Kas and a whole string of Kohanim. It's structured in the way where we hear about who the father is and the son. Elazar, Halidus Pinchas, Pinchas Halidus Avishua, Avishua Halidus Bebuki, as one long list until we get to the times of Yehotzadak, who went into exile at the times of the goddess of Yehuda and Yerushalayim, at the times of Nebuchadnezzar. So what's the point of this list? Why we hear about these 24 generations? So it seems that we're moving from the times of Yehuda and Shimon, the tribes of Yehuda and Shimon, and because Shimon was included in Yehuda, and then Reuven and his neighbors to Levi. So we're kind of sort of sequentially moving on to the next tribe. So that's why we're in Levi right now. And it seems to be a chain of leaders of Kohanim from the times of the Mishkan until the times of the end of the Beis Hamikdash, which is a period governing essentially 1,000 years and more. The presentation seems to be a pretty clear, unbroken chain of yichus, of lineage, from the times of Aaron till the times of the destruction, which focuses on the continuity of the chain in a similar way that Dira Yamim focused on the continuity of the chain of David. So Malchus was carefully preserved for posterity in the Sefer Dira Yamim, and so too is the Kohanim. As you notice, if you look in Sefer Ezra, he spends an immense amount of time analyzing the history of the different families to preserve that aspect of the family. It is interesting that there seems to be a number of missing gaps in this list, because there are famous Kohanim Gedolim like Eli and his sons at the times of Shmuel, Yehoyada, Uri at the times of Yehoshaphat, Azariah at the times of Uziah, another Azariah at the times of Chizkiyahu Melech, who are omitted from this list of Kohanim Gedolim. Why are they left out? So the Malbim points out that this list is not focusing on every Kohen Gadol, this is a list focusing on the posterity of the family, which means that it's following the family of Pinchas. Some of the children of Pinchas were Kohanim Gedolim, and some were not. So therefore, this list oscillates in terms of who the actual Kohanim Gedolim are, because the point of this chain is the posterity of the chain itself, more than the position it's filled. And this allows us now to be able to say that when we look at Yehotzadak and his children, as we carry on reading Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah, we can clearly demarcate as to where they came from, and the fact that they were linked to Aaron HaKohen all the way back to Levi, which now preserves another house of security in Israel, first Malchus, and now Kahuna. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.